Welcome back to the podcast, Period to Pause, listeners. Well, on today's episode, I have a guest who is sharing her story of a challenging upbringing and being able to move through having a toxic family to finding freedom in adulthood. Today's guest, Susan Gold, is an author of the book Toxic Family: Transforming Childhood Trauma into Adult Freedom. She now helps others take on their childhoods and courageously create their own journey in adulthood to heal and to move through trauma. You will not want to miss today's conversation. I also want to share with those of you out there who have suffered through childhood abuse or trauma, or might find anything that we're talking about today triggering, please skip this episode. There are serious topics we'll be talking about: childhood abuse, sexual abuse, and other things that may be really sensitive for some of you. So please honor what you need when listening to today's episode. Now let's go ahead and dive on in. Okay, so we have another really deep, transformative conversation we're having today. And we're talking about the intergenerational trauma, your inner child, setting that trauma free. I have an amazing guest with me today, Susan Gold. Susan, welcome to the podcast.
Amanda, I'm really happy to be here and delighted.
I am delighted you're here too, and that you're willing to share your story of childhood trauma into freedom with this audience. This is something we're digging into even more, particularly we're recording in the month of May right now. And May, at least for me, can be a triggering month. And maybe for some other folks, when they think about their family units, I just want to start with, if you're willing to share your story, and then we can move into kind of navigating that story and being able to heal yourself.
Yeah, sure. I was the middle of five kids, being raised by two adults who definitely were doing the best they could. But my dad was a genius astrophysicist, and he also liked to pop the whiskey cork off the bottle at 7:30 a.m. and you'd hear glug, 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 glug. He was fun. He was adventuresome. The smell of whiskey and whiskers and Old Spice and Scope meant love to me and romance. My mother could be so kind and nurturing. She was incredibly talented. She'd give Martha Stewart a run for her money, but she could also flip on a dime, and her eyes could go into cold slits, and she'd go from kindness to absolutely shaking you and beating you, and you didn't know why. So my family was chaotic. It was dangerous. It was abuse in every form, lathered over every crevice. And I have three brothers and a sister. We all have very different versions of growing up in that home. And I left the morning after I graduated from high school at 7:45 a.m.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that interesting that some of these visceral things, or the smells, the sounds, the time, stick within your body and within your memory of either the abuse or the safety that you were able to bring yourself into?
And it really vacillated. It was like being a ping pong ball. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was quite intuitive and telepathic, and it's what helped me stay safe. But I also was highly traumatized. I remember feeling split out of my body and watching the scene around the dinner table as the trauma exploded.
Oh, I completely am with you. I felt like I developed so many mechanisms to keep myself and my sister safe. And I remember being at my dinner table too, at times knowing when my dad might fly off the handle, and being able to see the micro changes in his behavior, and almost, yeah, sitting outside my body going, okay, how do I keep myself safe here? How do I keep my sister safe? And she was older, by the way. I just played the role of the older sister. And what do we do to at least make it out alive of this household?
There was a piece of me that knew it and knew it young. I mean, I think I was two in that playpen for way too long and just sobbing. And then expecting some kind of care and soothing and being beaten instead. I mean, my mother was incredibly frustrated. I understand where she was coming from. She had horrendous abuse. She was molested as a young girl. She was beaten by her father, who was beaten by his stepmother, almost to the point of death, which created his psychotic episodes. My father's father was a man child. He didn't want children. He wanted to be the child. Mm-hmm. And my father could do nothing to measure up. So it's hurt and abused children raising hurt and abused children.
When did you become aware that that was the life you lived in and know that, okay, it's time for me to try to do something different in order to heal myself and to become a different human being?
I was in my early 20s. I was living in New York City. I was very goal-oriented. I was a risk taker. I was a hard worker. But I was in relationships that were abusive and dramatic, a lot of fighting. And it was similar to the dynamic between my own parents. Mm-hmm. I took a slug from a wine jug at work to ask for a raise. Mm-hmm. And I was blacking out. I didn't know when I was going to black out, but because I didn't want to be myself, I needed to know there was a drink at any kind of social gathering. My friends became more fair weather and seedier, and my goals and my values were slipping. It was just as easy for me to lie as to tell the truth, and I didn't understand why. So these red flags had to be addressed, and thankfully I did, and I got professional help. I was really fortunate, so I could begin to lay a level playing field so I could begin to do the work that it would take to recover from my upbringing, and also, you know, to explore the remnants that it left in my adulthood.
What did that work or that transformation start to look like for you?
Well, the first thing I did was to get clean. And it wasn't easy. I went to a therapist, and the words out of my mouth was, my life is out of control and completely unmanageable. And he immediately started, was there alcoholism in my family? Did my father drink? I said, why are you asking me these questions? He said, do you drink? I said, of course I do. I'm happy when I drink. And he said, well, while you're in treatment with me, I suggest you not drink. You go to meetings to learn about your father's drinking problem. And you may want to go to these other meetings for kids that were raised by alcoholics. And what I did learn was my mother was on speed. She was prescribed diet pills, which was speed. So I was being raised by an alcoholic and a speed freak. And though I can't put a label on it, I do believe she was suffering horrendously with mental illness.
Yeah.
So that was the initiation. Step number one was to get clean, and then to pick up the tools that were around me for that kind of recovery, and three, get professional help. I was able to lay down like the talk track. Like, I could tell you, you know, it took everything to go back into that household and bring up the memories, and it was a bit like Sherlock Holmes exploring. There's very severe abuse between my oldest brother and I. He basically used me as a lab rat in his back bedroom, and it's pretty standard. I mean, his childhood is black. He's got total amnesia, and it's pretty standard that when you're in a chaotic environment like that, this is going to happen. I hid behind my sister. She was like my shield, my human shield. And my two brothers, I just felt really sad when it was time for me to leave. I didn't want to leave them behind in this utter chaos. But ultimately, I was able to do the work, and I did have to get help. I think I was 4.5 years clean, Amanda, when I went to my first treatment center. Usually people do it in the reverse, but I was in the middle of a business deal. I was very successful. I became known for matching celebrities to brands, and I was negotiating contracts for this big event where two companies were merging, and they had every household name there, and I was brokering the deals, and it was like brokering the fights between my parents. I mean, there was one night when I heard them screaming right outside my door, and I was in the bottom bunk. And I woke up in a start, and I heard my mother pleading for her life outside my door. So I open the door, and I see my father with his hands above his head and a knife in his hands. And my mother is pleading for him not to kill her. And I said, "Stop it, guys. Stop it." And then I immediately passed out. I just hit the ground. And this business deal triggered that trauma. And I literally split out of my body. I became suicidally depressed. And I went to treatment for codependency. And I also learned that I had a serotonin lapse. I had run out of that chemical naturally. And so they had to boost it with medication, which I did not want to take. Mm-hmm. And I was off and on the medication and in therapy for about 10 years, off and on, until I learned how to deal with the triggers, the signs, and I didn't fall down as hard and didn't ultimately need the medications. Mm.
What's your relationship like now with your family?
I love them. Are you ready for this? Like, I am so proud of my family and the roles that they've taken on in this earthly walk. As I said, you know, my parents came in with their traumas unhealed. And I believe that I picked that family and I picked that position so I could transform what I needed to, because ultimately, Amanda, it's been a long process, a very long process, but I have incredible compassion for myself and what I experienced. And I have self-love for that little one in here that's walked through all of it, even when I kicked her down. And I have incredible self-love that I did not understand and didn't want any part of before I actually reached the point of recovery that I am in now. And it's been a huge awakening to drop that bag I was carrying of victimization, of martyrdom, of shame that did not belong to me, and the abuse. Let it go. It's like when Robert De Niro is carrying that bag in The Mission, and he's like climbing up the cliff, and they're like encouraging him to drop the bag, and he won't drop it. I dropped it. It's profound. And yeah. I feel like, even though I had this really blessed like career, this amazing, exciting trajectory in my career, this is my purpose, and this is my mission. And I think, you know, I'm definitely going to check out the fine print before I ever do this again. But what ultimately a gift for soul evolution and to help others through it, including members of my own family.
Yeah, that's an interesting one for me. I mean, I recently shared on the podcast a little bit about my upbringing and the abuse and not having a mother figure in my life. I mean, having women that were technically moms, but not really serving as a mother to me. And I don't have contact with them because I feel it's safer for me in this lifetime not to. I don't feel that they're ready to do the work, but I also with you in that this is my soul's contract in this lifetime. And so, you know, I was contractually connected to them for a reason, and possibly to share my story and to give voice to other people's stories. However, my choice is I will observe from a distance and still protect myself.
And I honor that. I think it was 3 years I had no contact with my mother while I worked through the issues. I think the last time I visited her, I had come back so suicidal. I said, that's it. And didn't take phone calls. And my dad, I've sort of always kept at arm's length. I don't engage much with my family. That, you know, I moved to the other side of the country as well, which was helpful. And it's been a long process of forgiveness and healing in my own experiences to be where I am now. And I'm not saying that I need to be here for full recovery.
What does the concept of motherhood mean to you? We're exploring that a little bit this month and we'll continue to explore it. So what does the concept of motherhood mean to you?
Well, first of all, I'm so grateful that you shared about your own story with motherhood and what it means to you and being born on Mother's Day and just the content that you are producing. Like, I'm humbled and on my knees grateful. I was terrified of motherhood, becoming a mother. Like, I would look at dogs on the street, but I didn't want anything to do with babies and carriages. No, thank you. And then I went to LA for what I thought was an incredible career move. And it was, but it really, I believe, was to meet the man who would be one of my greatest gurus. And that is the man who would become my ex-husband.
Mm.
And we were about a year into the relationship and we were having dinner and he started talking about having a family. And I said, is this a deal breaker? Because I'm not sure I want to go that direction. And I think I mentioned there are five kids in my family growing up. There's two blood grandchildren. Because we got the message strong that children were problems. They caused problems. They were expensive. And stay away from them if you can. Also, because of the abuse, I thought I would abuse any child in my world. And he really wanted to have a gaggle of children if he could. So after some thought, I said, yeah, maybe one. And honestly, Amanda, I thought, there's no freaking way. I was already 40, I think, when we had that conversation. And my friends had been like poking themselves in the abdomen with all sorts of fertility stuff. And yeah, I thought, I probably got an out card. And then we ultimately got married and he said, okay. I said, okay, you know, we'll try. And by then, I'm 42 years old. And boom, that dipstick turned blue so fast. And I was not rejoicing. Let's just put it that way. I was terrified, but I also knew I would miss something, perhaps, if I was in my mom. And so I prepped and it was 10 hours natural delivery door to door. And I did the best I could. I was 43 when I delivered. And I just gave my son what I thought that I would dream of and what I wanted. So he was the only child that I wanted to be. And I treated him as his own individual being, separate from myself, with his own plan, with his own dream, with his own mission. And it's been a privilege. An absolute privilege. And I was so blessed. I mean, my friends used to say, is the president in this afternoon? He's just like super wise beyond his mirrors and would play with one thing. And when he got tired of it, he'd gently go on to the next one. He wasn't jumping off furniture. He was like pretty careful, pretty wise from the get.
Well, I think that's one way to break the intergenerational trauma. You know, I think with my story that I shared, I'm not able to become a mom naturally. And I don't believe right now that that's my path on this planet. However, I broke the cycle in one way and you've broken it in another way. And so I honor you for that and for having me doing the work and having the awareness that that's the type of child and human being you wanted to raise and the human being you wanted to show up as.
Yeah, I didn't think I was going to do it. really went kicking and screaming.
So you have written a book about all of this called Toxic Family, Transforming Childhood Trauma into Adult Freedom. What has been the impact of you sharing your story so openly with your book?
I'm taking a breath because I'll just be honest. Last night, I was with my partner who's amazing, and that's a gift in and of itself, which is we'll get into another podcast in the future. But I had a flashback, and I haven't had one in quite some time. And as part of my mission to get word out on the book, I'm doing a lot of podcasts because I can't stand social media.
Oh, yeah, I know, right?
So it's just kicking up a lot of it again for me. It was in carefully constructed compartments. I mean, obviously dissected. And that talk therapy helped, but it was really somatic modalities that have literally shifted the fabric of my being and helped me. But I was told in 2007 by an Irish seer, I had a book to write. And I was like, I'm not going through that just for a PR tool. You're going to be nuts. And then two other intuitives told me. And finally, in 2019, the intuitive said, you've got three books to write. You've got a lot to say. But oh, well, before I have to write a library, I better get at it. So I was like a bulldog producer. And I made myself sit at my computer for 15 minutes a day, whether I had something to write or not. And that gave me the first pass, but I had no real connection. Mm-hmm. And a very wise friend said, you may want to take another pass at it from little Susie's point of view. And that, Amanda, shifted everything. That all the pieces fell into place. And I also decided that all the exercises that I garnered through my experience recovering were of value. I still use a lot of them today. And so in the appendix, I decided to put in a workbook that corresponds with each chapter. And I'm going to try not to tear up, but people are being helped. Like, they're being changed. Like, some people say the story is an activation in and of itself, but then they go and do like the exercises and they're having insights and shifts. And yeah, I'm just really grateful.
That's beautiful. What do you want people who might be listening to this podcast and your story, what do you want people to really know and hear?
We'll do this experientially. So if you can just take a breath with me and then take your hand and put it on your solar plexus. It's like right under your breastbone, maybe a little lower than your heart, but just under there, and just get a feeling of what that is. Keep breathing, and then just whisper either out loud or to yourself, I'm okay. I'm okay. It's all okay.
That's beautiful. I hope people that are listening to this take some time to do that for themselves on a daily basis. It's such a good reminder that whatever folks are facing, whatever your past history, whatever the trauma, there's ways to heal.
There absolutely is. And you're a beacon of that light here, Amanda. Like, you're radiating it.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So before I ask the final question that I ask all of my guests, where can people find you, find the book, find more about your work? Can you share with folks where to find you?
Yeah, just go to susangold.us, and only if you feel pulled, susangold.us, and it's got everything there.
Thank you for sharing that. So one final question I ask all of my guests, what gives you hope right now?
Just my breath and the fact that I am here. I mean, honestly, Earth is a pretty intense ride. It may be like the straight up ghetto of the solar system, as Matt Kahn likes to say. So
yeah,
it gives me hope that I just walked this far and that I can continue walking.
I love that. I'm so honored when people answer that question and I get a little aha myself or hear something new that I haven't heard. Susan, I want to thank you for being here, for being so vulnerable, for sharing your story, for the work you put out into the world, for how you're helping people to heal, for talking about trauma, and also being able to help people move it through their bodies. And so thank you for all of your work. We honor you. And as we say here at Period to Pause, continue to go out there to educate, to rise, to vocalize, and mobilize. And we will see you next time. Take care. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to A Period to Pause podcast if you really liked it. If you didn't, you can go ahead and skip that step. And remember to follow the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And go check us out on Instagram and Clubhouse. Oh, and don't forget to tell another woman in your life that you support her, and it only takes one tiny action to lead to big change. See you next time. Now for a quick disclaimer. All of the information and views you hear on A Period to Pause podcast are purely the opinions of the host and her guest. They are not medical advice or treatment recommendations. The content of this podcast is intended for informational and educational purposes only. Always seek the guidance of your physician or qualified healthcare professional for any recommendations specific to you or for any questions you may have specific to your health, mental health, your sleep patterns, or changes to diet and exercise or any medical conditions.